for your March Madness fix.
Clock, baseline, up for the shot, dive, off the glass, the game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over, Michigan has won a national championship.
I got a feeling.
Holy mackerel, holy mackerel.
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot.
Yes! Just the shot by Tate George. Wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three. He does!
Give it a shot.
Smart takes the shot.
Oh!
Indiana wins the championship.
So now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court. It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win.
Gone!
Oh!
Nice, Drew did it! Valpo has won the game. A miracle!
One shining moment.
Wittenberg, oh, it's a long way.
Oh, they won it on the dot.
One shining moment.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gives it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
This is your home for the 2018 NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament, 96-1. WSBT, the sports leader, Sweet 16 action live on WSBT Radio. Thursday and Friday as we head down the road to the Final Four and what could be a very interesting Final Four with some higher seeds possibly heading to San Antonio. We welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Even though we have that NCAA basketball theme in our heads, we're going to focus a lot on Notre Dame football today. Spring practice resumed. Practice number three for Brian Kelly's football team. And Coach Kelly met the media after today's practice, and we will play back several of his comments throughout the program. We'll hear from Brian talking about the wide receiver position. Jobs up for grabs. Equanimeous St. Brown decided to go to the NFL early. Who are some of the wide receivers making a move? One stood out more than any other. We will allow Brian to tell you who that is coming up in just a couple of moments. Also, Cole Kmet doing a pretty good job for Mick Aoki's baseball team. The left-handed pitcher has a 2.61 ERA in 20 and two-thirds innings for the Fighting Irish. He was back on the football field today, trying to gain more playing time at a very competitive tight end position. So how is this all going to work with baseball and spring football? We'll tell you coming up in just a couple of moments. Your home this year for Colts football is 96.1 WSBT. They have made a couple of free agent signings. Details on that coming up in just a little bit. We have a couple of Notre Dame hockey segments to get to. The Irish preparing for the NCAA tournament Friday at 3 o'clock, a regional semifinal matchup against WCHA tournament champion Michigan Tech. You can hear that Friday 3 o'clock faceoff on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. At around 5:50, we'll play back comments from Fighting Irish head coach Jeff Jackson preparing for this matchup, and you will hear from Coach Jackson live in about an hour and 20 minutes as he will offer his insight of this Michigan Tech hockey team that's played pretty good hockey coming down the stretch to fight their way into the NCAA tournament. Also coming up next hour, you will hear from Irish junior cornerback Julian Love. What a season he had last year. 20 passes defensed, 3 interceptions, 68 tackles in 2017. What is he hoping to accomplish in 2018? You will hear from Julian coming up. We also have rapid fire on the way. All tonight on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And thanks for joining us on 96.1, WSBTRadio.com, the WSBT Radio app, which you can get free at the iTunes or Google Play Store. And also, you can just go to TuneIn Radio as well, get our link and listen to the program however you would like. And we thank all the folks like Joey, who was on Twitter today asking how to listen to the program. So we gave him a couple of options. So Joey, if you're listening, we appreciate your interest and hope you enjoy the program tonight. I think he was ready for a little football conversation on this first day of spring, Tuesday, March 20th, 2018. So Eric Hansen, your eyes were at spring practice today for about 15 minutes or so. So people like Joey want to know, what's the one thing that caught your eye today?
The one thing that caught my eye today was Cole Kmet getting first team reps. And I know we're going to talk about him later in the show. So should I pick something else?
Okay, moving on to the second most important. Yeah, we've got a Cole Kmet segment coming up. Yeah. So why don't you save that? But I did notice in some of your notes, and Eric has put some of his observations in a piece that you can read right now at IndyInsider.com, and it will be in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune. I don't want people to read anything into this because it's going to be a revolving door, right? Probably, Eric, throughout spring practice on the left side of the offensive line. But yep, Trevor Rulon had his chance at Quentin Nelson's old spot today, left guard.
He sure did. And, yeah, you're right. I still think Josh Lugg is the guy with the inside track, but they're going to look at Trevor Rulon there. I think somehow Liam Eichenberg is going to work into the mix, although I don't think they really want to move other people around. I think that that was more of an option if you said, okay, Tommy Kramer's going to be a guard and Liam is going to be the right tackle or the left tackle. And it just seems like Kramer and Hainsey are settling into the tackles. I'd kind of be surprised if they did anything but auditioning for that left guard spot at this point. I thought they'd look at more combinations, but I wouldn't count Eichenberg out. He's a really talented guy, and maybe he'd get a look at guard.
Mm-hmm. And on the defensive side of the football, this is something you actually asked Coach Kelly today. We're not going to get to that audio in today's show, but you were asking about the early enrollee freshman at the linebacker position, if anybody is catching his eye, and do you think there's any opportunities? Because you got obviously two pretty good starters right now in Tavon Cody and Drew Tranquil that are pretty hard to take off the football field.
They are, but Notre Dame really was effective in playing three linebackers last year. You know, their three linebackers and their rover were their top four tacklers. Tavon Cody actually wasn't a starter till about midway through the season, and so they would like to have a strong rotation, and you certainly want people ready to step in if somebody got hurt. And so Darren, off the top of your head, who do you think would be the two first guys in? That's why I asked the question, because it's really, you've moved Jameer Jones to defensive end. So you're looking at Jonathan Jones, and then there's freshman and redshirt freshman, and that's why I was kind of curious who caught his eye. And Brian Kelly said Bo Bauer right now is the guy that's kind of most camera ready of the three, and that's Ovi Agofu.
Look at you.
And Jack Lamb. I think long term, Jack Lamb is the guy with maybe the highest ceiling, but, you know, I remember Tyler James, when Bo Bauer first committed, saying that he thought he was going to be a really good linebacker. He was much more impressed with him than the linebackers that had committed in the 2017 class, and he thought he had a chance to be pretty good. And so Bo Bauer is the guy that's ahead there, and I would, I mean, if he keeps moving at his pace, he would be a guy in the two deeps. Now, the thing about it is Jack Lamb and Ovi are going to have a whole summer with Matt Bayless to get stronger, because that's really the issue with them. It's not that they can't learn the defense or they're not athletic enough. It's pure strength and size right now. So if they can get bigger and stronger, then maybe they could factor in a little bit more.
Those are huge storylines. But as I look at the defense, I look at the rover position. Mm-hmm. Because, Eric, when teams spread the field, I don't see Bilal being the guy that stays on the field. He's more of a player that you want when the tight end is on the field. And I'm just wondering what this rover position is going to look like when most teams are going to come out in three wide receiver sets. And I know you're a big fan of Koromoa.
Right.
Do you feel like he's got the inside track? We hear Bilal's name all the time, but to me, maybe I'm looking at it from the Drew Tranquil Rover mindset. I mean, that's the only way we've seen the Rover pretty much in game situations is Tranquil playing that position. A little more quickness, not as much size as Bilal is. Bilal's 6'2", 225. Although Tranquil's 6'2", 233. They don't...
Yeah,
Tranquil is deceiving,
yeah, that's what was kind of funny about last year where people said, well, you know, Bilal, he's bigger, and I'm like...
It just feels bigger, but yeah. Tranquil actually is really, really good size.
Yeah.
But quickness, although, you know, that's a part of the conversation as well. So as you look at the Rover position, do you believe the Bilal hype right now, or are there some young guys just waiting in the wings to take that particular spot?
Well, I think this is a big spring for Bilal, but I think Brian Kelly, what he didn't say today was as interesting as what he did say. I think Shane Simon is a real candidate for that spot.
Really?
The true freshman that comes in June from St. Peter's Prep. And if you talk to Steve Wiltfong, Steve believes that Shane Simon is the best recruit in the class, and that includes Phil Jurkovec.
Wow.
He thinks he's the most impacting recruit and thinks he can be a starter. I do think that Brian Kelly thinks that's a possibility, and maybe not a probability. They're playing with a lot of possibilities here. Bilal is a guy that we mentioned, you know, as one of our men of mystery, that he's a guy that really has some great athletic ability but hasn't been able to always translate that into playing time. And the clock's kind of ticking with him. They feel really good about him against, he says, tight end teams. So think Michigan and Stanford. Those are the teams that would be the two that jump out at me that he would match up with. But I would say more teams are going to be somebody else. I know they like Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah's traits. Can he be reliable enough not to make the big mistake? The other option, Darren, and Brian Kelly kind of hinted at this, is using a nickel there, because last year the Rover stayed on the field in nickel coverage. You could take the Rover off and play with Coney and Tranquil, and then just have your nickel be that 11th defender. And right now the nickel looks like Sean Crawford or
Houston Griffith
is...
He's
going to be in that depth, I'm telling you, Darren. So, I mean, he's going to play this year somewhere, and that's just such a deep position corner, but they're going to find a way to get him, use him, because he's really... really advanced. He's a really good athlete, and he's a really advanced football player. And if he keeps moving it this direction, he's going to be on the field somewhere.
Two things. Steve Wiltfong, he always has my ear, because he said a couple of times on our program leading into last year, he didn't believe Darnell Yule was going to be ready to play. He was one of the few people that said that, and he turned out to be exactly right on that. And the second thing is, as someone that grew up near the University of Illinois, when Howard Griffith, Houston's dad, was playing there and scored 8 touchdowns in one game against Southern Illinois, and then he played for my pro football team and won 2 Super Bowls, it's going to be a matter of time before I call Houston Howard. I can't believe it hasn't happened yet. But Howard was a terrific running back, and now Houston, of course, decommitted from Florida State, joined Notre Dame, and boy, that could be a huge, huge get for this Fighting Irish defense, and obviously making some impact already in spring practice. So what about the offense and the defense? A lot of continuity this year. Even though the defensive coordinator changed, it is still the same philosophy. The offense still has Chip Long in charge. So what about the continuity? Has that showed up so far in spring practice? Here's what Brian Kelly had to say earlier today.
I think you start to see it in such a smaller batch. You know, today, you know, quarterback, you know, Wimbush and, you know, Miles, you know, having a great relationship out there. You can see that they are going to connect on some big plays for us. You see it in Sam Mustipher, you know, that his experience out there, you know, controls things from the snapping and recognition up front. You know, defensively, you know, you don't see a lot of the miscues that maybe we had at other times relative to, you know, a number of guys that have had a lot of experience. So I don't think you see it in a transformational sense as much as you see it in just small areas that look to be really clean, if you will, from my eye when I watch in practice.
Well, one of the areas of interest, if you're watching spring practice, would be the wide receiver position. Equanimeous St. Brown decided to go to the NFL a year early. There are jobs up for grabs right now. Chase Claypool trying to become a more consistent, complete wide receiver. You've got the Michael Young buzz from last year. Great opportunity for him to get on the field. And then there's Miles Boykin, who had that touchdown catch against LSU that we're not going to forget anytime soon. Maybe this opens the door with EQ gone for Miles Boykin to be a big-time contributor for this Fighting Irish offense. Brian Kelly assessed the wide receiver position today and talked a little bit about Miles Boykin.
Miles Boykin, I think he's playing with a lot of confidence as a guy that obviously now with EQ moving on, you know, has that opportunity to really shine, and he's had three really good practices. So, you know, I think that's a guy that now ascends. You know, I think everybody else is, you know, in that process of developing to that next level. Chase Claypool, you know, Chris Fink, Michael Young, Javon McKinley's going to have to now, you know, step up and show that, you know, count on me in this spring. And then, as you know, we have a host of young freshmen that are going to get a chance to come in and compete for playing time. So I'd say McKinley right now, the tight ends, Cole Kmet looks outstanding. I know he's getting a lot of play in terms of what he's doing in baseball, but equally impressive in terms of what he's doing in spring ball from a football standpoint.
I mean, we can't talk about wide receivers without hearing Cole Kmet's name. He is the flavor of choice right now, and for good reason. It is not a fluke. He is pitching and a guy that's going to play a lot at tight end this year. More on Cole coming up in the next segment. We'll continue to just tease Cole Kmet before we get to it. But the wide receiver position is a very interesting spot, Eric. The passing game, the accuracy of the quarterback, without a doubt affected the wide receiver. I mean, who would have thought Equanimeous St. Brown wouldn't break the 40 catch mark last year? It's kind of hard to believe. So he's off to the National Football League. You just look at some of the names of the wide receivers that could be out there. Michael Young, Freddie Canteen. You've got Miles Boykin, Javon McKinley, Chase Claypool, Chris Fink. You could go on and on. That's the nucleus. How ready do you think Boykin is to be the guy now? I mean, this is a great opportunity for him to be that boundary wide receiver in this offense. There doesn't appear to be any obstacles in his way.
Yeah, what he has to do is sustain this good start, Darren, because we saw he had a pretty good spring last year when they unstacked the W's, as I like to say. They had three big receivers. They were all at the same position. They said, hey, let's take a look in the spring of them all playing together. That was Chase Claypool, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Miles Boykin. And then as it got closer to the season, they decided to go a different way with that, eventually leading to Kevin Stefferson coming back in Game 5 and probably being their best alignment. Chase Claypool settled into the slot, and Miles Boykin settled into the bench behind Equanimeous St. Brown. But he looked good last spring. He looks better so far in the three practices. You know, he looks like the alpha dog. I would agree with Brian Kelly. And then you got to see what the other guys can give you. Now, again, Javon McKinley is at Boykin's spot, and that was one of the guys Brian mentioned today. So, you know, Chase Claypool is getting number two reps, and I think some of that has to do with him not being completely well yet with his shoulder. He's not going to be able to take contact, so he's not going to get number one reps, but there's just a big jumble. And you know what, Darren? It's going to get jumbled again in the spring because Kevin Austin comes in, Lawrence Keys, Braden Lindsey, Micah Jones is already here of the freshmen. So those guys are going to get a really long, real long look. So I would say at the blue-gold game, there might be hints of who is surfacing on the depth chart, but I don't think we're going to get conclusions until August on this wide receiver group.
Kevin Stefferson, a deep threat, produced pretty well once he got on the football field last year. Of course, not a part of the program anymore due to numerous off-the-field issues. And I'm not necessarily asking who's going to replace Kevin Stefferson. My question is more about his production. Do you feel like his production could be split in other areas? For example, there could be more tight end catches. There could be more running back catches. It's not necessarily going to be the slot guy or the wide side of the field, wide receiver, picking up some of the slack with Stefferson being gone. Do you feel like it's going to be one of those aggregate situations where, with all these great tight ends, it would just seem logical they have to be more involved this year?
Well, it can be, but the one thing specifically that Will Fuller gave you that you got some of with Kevin Stefferson was it put defensive coordinators in a dilemma. They had to decide, as Pittsburgh did, do I want to single cover him and use my safety in the run game or use my safety somewhere else? And he just killed Pittsburgh. I mean, I don't remember the stats, but it was, if he played Pittsburgh every week, he would have been the Heisman Trophy winner. Or you could say, okay, I need to double cover his routes every single time. I still may not be able to cover him. And now I'm giving up lots in the run game. I'm giving things up to the other wide receivers. And we saw what happened with Notre Dame's offense when they didn't have the stretch the field receiver on the field in the first four games last year. Teams decided to double Equanimeous into the boundary, which you don't expect. And then they said, we'll take our chances with the other guys. And so it's not so much about can you replace his production, it's can you replace the predicament that he can put defensive coordinators in where they have to make different choices. Otherwise, Miles Boykin's going to get doubled into the boundary and they're going to say, we'll take our chances with your other guys.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, 28 minutes after the top of the hour. We'll get to some more spring football talk in our next segment, and we will finally talk about the sophomore tight end Cole Kmet impressing on the football field and on the mound for Mick Aoki's baseball team. The X Stadium home opener is tonight against Northern Illinois, so good luck to the Irish baseball team. We'll talk about Kmet and pass along some Indianapolis Colts free agency news as well. Also, before the top of the hour, the My Five question of the day, the five parts of the Irish offense that will be different in 2018 compared to 2017. Answers coming up. And don't forget, 1 hour from right now, we'll be joined live by Notre Dame hockey coach Jeff Jackson as his Irish prepare for the NCAA tournament on Friday. He's Eric. I'm Darren. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds on your sports leader, 96.1 WSBT. Minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett getting set to head to Bridgeport, Connecticut, where I will give you an up-close account of a Northeaster tomorrow. Of all places to have a regional, we're a Northeaster.
All three of the regionals will get the Nor'easter.
Pennsylvania, yeah, I forgot about that. Allentown.
And Worcester, Massachusetts, and Bridgeport.
And then good old Sioux Falls will be just beautiful, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's going to be probably the warmest, least snowy spot, won't it, of the four?
I'm sure the nightlife will not equal the other three cities, but if you're into good, clean living, go to Sioux Falls for that hockey regional.
The funny thing about Worcester's nightlife was
Worcester.
A few years ago, I stayed up in the Boston area to do a story on Brian Kelly, who's from the Boston area, went to high school there, went to college in Worcester at Assumption College, Assumption maybe University now. And I went to a bar just to talk to people about Brian Kelly, and the bartender, the guy that owned the bar, His sister played softball for Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly's first coaching job in football included coaching the women's softball team at Assumption. And his sister was on Brian Kelly's team, and he had nothing but good things to say about Brian. But it was kind of funny coincidence.
Absolutely. Like to see Brian back in the day coaching softball. That would have been interesting.
Well, the one thing that I did talk to a sister about that, and she said, you know, the one thing that she noticed from the early football articles was everybody's lockers had to be neat. And really? And she said he was a really good coach. They were sad when he left.
How about that?
Yeah.
Little did they know.
Yeah.
What was in his future.
Yep.
Head coach of the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame football team. So I will give you all the details on the Northeaster up there. It's going to be wicked awesome, isn't it? Unbelievable. From what I understand, we're going to be going to Connecticut where they're going to have 11 to 12 inches of snow tomorrow.
Well, at least you'll be inside, but it's just getting there is, you know, and getting there safely is the issue, isn't it?
Thank you for that thought, Eric. Greatly appreciate that.
I want everybody to send warm thoughts your way.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I'll let you know what happens. All right. I won't be on the program tomorrow. I'll be on the program Thursday, so I'll give you wall-to-wall coverage of the Northeaster.
Okay.
Tell you what's happening. All right, we will have Coach Jackson on from the Irish hockey team in just about an hour here on 96.1 WSBT. We have a little hockey segment coming up before the end of this hour. Right now, let's talk a little more spring football. The Irish on the practice field for a third time today, practice number 4 on Thursday. And for Cole Komet, a very busy day, practicing this morning with the football team, at least sitting in the bullpen today at X Stadium for the Irish baseball game. I mean, he's not going to pitch in a midweek game, but at least he'll be there supporting his teammates near a heater probably, watching the Irish take on Northern Illinois in their opener at X Stadium in just a little bit. But let's talk about Cole Komet, the football player, first, and then we'll mix in a little baseball conversation. Brian Kelly had a short little comment on Cole Komet, the football player, earlier today.
Yeah, I mean, he's smooth, catches the ball, big, physical, He's a really, really good player.
So that's the Cliff Note version of who Cole Komet is. Makes valid points. Physical. Catches the ball extremely well. Would you like to add on to the biography of Cole Komet? The football player, at least.
Yeah. I think he's a guy that has a chance to be special because of his athletic ability and because of the kind of person he is. And, you know, Alize Mack was the first guy out there in what they call tempo drills. And then all of a sudden you see Cole Komet rotating in with the first team. So that kind of deems them even in the coaching eyes. And I know a lot of these early depth chart things are very Mirage-like, mm-hmm. Mirage-esque, however you want to say that. But I think this one is significant that this early in the spring, especially with all the baseball that Cole Komet has played, that they are seeing him as an ascending player. And Brian Kelly backed it up with the comments that he had about Cole and how well he's doing. And again, somebody was asking about wide receivers, and his name came up in terms of guys that were impressing early. And I just think whether Alize finally comes through or not, Cole Komet's going to be on the field a lot. And it's going to be the impact player that he really didn't have a chance to be as a freshman when they had such a deep tight end core, and they really didn't have the time or the need to develop him. Now that they do, boy, is he developing fast.
Would you say unofficially he has passed Brock Wright in terms of confidence from the coaching staff?
I would say easily, although it's easy to say that because Brock Wright isn't going to be 100% healthy this spring. He's recovering from an injury, but he is getting some reps. But, you know, that's part of it is that, you know, being healthy gives you a chance to move past people. I don't know that the coaching staff had more confidence in Brock Wright last year. I think they're both excellent prospects. I mean, coming out of high school, they were 1-2, 1-3, 2-3, tight ends in the country and decided to go to school at the same place. And I think you'll see both of those guys become, you know, the kind of tight ends Notre Dame's used to putting in the NFL. I think you'll see that down the road from both of them. But Brock Wright had a very specialized role where he was a blocking tight end. He was a fullback, essentially, in short yardage and goal line situations. They didn't throw Brock Wright the ball. Komet, had somebody gotten hurt earlier in the season, Komet would have been the guy that they would have gone to in that role. But he's just too good to kind of hold down another year. And that's even with the baseball. And I went back and looked and wanted to see how much Samardzija pitched while he, because Samardzija's first year, he wasn't doing anything with the football team anyways. He was deep on the bench his freshman year, and he pitched, I want to say 56 innings. I've got it at my story. And then that inning count went up every year until he was drafted by the Cubs. And I know that Mick Aoki believes that not only can Cole Kmet pitch, but he could play a position for them as well, that he's that good of an offensive player. He has had one pinch hitting appearance, and he got out. But I don't think they want to throw too much too soon. So it's going to be interesting. But Jeff Samardzija showed that you could be an All-American in one sport, be good enough to be drafted in another. We saw Pat Connaughton do it with basketball and baseball. I think it's much easier to do it as a pitcher than it is a position player.
Golden Tate, prime example.
Yeah, Golden Tate. Torrey Hunter is another example. Evan Sharpley. You know, I think if Evan had played baseball full-time, and I think he would tell you this, Evan Sharpley, you know, would have had a future in professional baseball. I think he was that good of a player, but, you know, football was his first love, and that's what was paying the freight at Notre Dame. So, but it's interesting with these two sport guys. But the thing is, with him, he's not a bit player in either. Right now, he's 11th in the ACC in ERA at 2.61. He's third in innings at 20 and a third. He's been in seven games. He's a reliever, but he pitches a bunch of innings when he relieves. His two saves are against two teams that are ranked, LSU and Florida State.
Opponents are hitting only 217 against him.
Right. I mean, 15 strikeouts, which is third on the team, five of them looking. He's pitched in some really high-leverage situations and done a really good job. Left-handed pitcher, bats right-handed. But I do think that he's going to end up being a better football player than a baseball player. I think he's that good at tight end.
See, I was just going to ask you that after I played this soundbite. You're reading my mind once again.
Okay.
You've been doing this radio thing too long now. You know where I'm going to go with some of these things. So here was Coach Kelly today talking about Komet balancing football and baseball this spring.
Yeah, I think, you know, Cole is committed to football as number one and baseball as number two. And whatever he can do to help that baseball team and whatever he can do in terms of his schedule, he's going to make it work. You know, if there's a chance to win a championship it's going to help our baseball team, and we've got one spring practice, I'm probably going to do whatever I can to help our baseball team win a championship. But, you know, if they're playing a doubleheader and we've got a spring game, you know, he's going to probably miss one of those games. So, and Mick and I have done a pretty good job. You know, he'll slate him for the second game, you know, in a doubleheader, or, you know, he might slide him into a extra duty work on a Sunday. So we've been able to work out a pretty good schedule with him, and we'll continue to communicate as that moves forward.
And just a reminder, he has a football scholarship, so football is obviously his number one priority, as Brian Kelly was talking about, but that doesn't mean he cannot help the Irish on a weekend game in the ACC or possibly in the ACC tournament if they make the ACC tournament. Now, I know in your story, and you just mentioned it a second ago, you still think his best sport is going to be football. Can I ask you why you feel like he's going to be a better football player, knowing, you know, the opportunities lefties get in professional baseball, especially if he throws 95, 94, like we're led to believe, he's going to have every opportunity to figure that out being left-handed?
Well, he may have a choice like Jeff Samardzija did. I mean, Jeff Samardzija could have played in the NFL. He was good enough. He's a two-time All-American wide receiver. I just think that his skill set is his path to the NFL and his path to being a really good Notre Dame football player is much easier on the football field because of his skill set, because there's really not anything he can't do. You know, a lot of times at this stage of a tight end's career, you say, well, you know, he's really got the receiving thing down. He just has to learn how to be an inline blocker, and he can't play detached. Or you say, wow, he's a really good blocker like Taya Luatua, but, you know, we really need to work on him. He's not going to, you know, be able to split the field and go running down the middle of the field like Gronk. But this kid, you can detach him. You can play him with the line, you know, in the traditional sense. He can block. He can catch. There's, you know, he hasn't shown that he can throw a pass on a trick play. We'll give
one.
Him that.
It's 0 for 1.
Yeah. But, you know, with baseball, even if you are drafted very high, that doesn't mean you won't labor in the minor leagues forever or for a long time. You know, I know that there were times, you know, when we looked at Jeff Samardzija, we weren't sure where that whole thing was headed for a while. And then even when he got up to the majors, was he a starter? Was he a reliever? It was pretty muddled for a while until...
All he had was a fastball in college.
Right, right. And so, you know, left-handers are extremely valuable.
Thank you.
Would be nice if he had a choice, and he might. I mean, it's so early. I mean, we're 20 innings into his college baseball career, but just his makeup, just the way that he took a 15-loss team and willed it to the state championship in Illinois last year kind of tells you something about him.
Only thing I don't like on his stat line, 9 walks in 20 and 2/3 innings.
Absolutely.
Everything else looks really, really good.
And I think some of that is, you know, again,
trust your stuff.
You're playing in a bowl game, and he's just, you know, he didn't have a whole lot of time to get ready for the season. And then his debut comes against a top 10 ranked LSU team on the road against the heart of their lineup to close out that game.
4 shutout innings.
Yeah.
Pretty remarkable.
And he had to go against the middle of the order to finish it.
Got the job done. Indianapolis Colts news. We've got Colts football on WSBT radio this fall. 3 free agent signings of note over the last 24 hours or so. Former Lions tight end Eric Ebron joining the Colts. 10th overall pick in the 2014 draft by Detroit. His average in 4 years with the Lions, 57 catches. Last year, 53 for 574 yards. Very interesting tight end duo. Now in Indianapolis, if Ebron holds onto the football, and that's always a question mark, he joins Jack Doyle, who had 80 catches with 4 touchdown receptions last year, and that's without Andrew Luck. Second most catches by a tight end in the National Football League. The Colts need help at the wide receiver position. You've got T.Y. Hilton, Chester Rogers coming back, Dante Moncrief has signed with the Jaguars, Kamar Aiken is a free agent. So they went out and got Redskins wide receiver Ryan Grant. No, not that Ryan Grant.
Yeah.
But on Twitter, the old Notre Dame running back Ryan Grant, who played for the Packers, got a whole bunch of tweets, congratulations on joining the Washington Redskins. Twitterverse got the wrong Ryan Grant, who had a 4-year, $29 million deal pulled by the Ravens due to concerns over an ankle injury. He gets a 1-year, $5 million deal with Indianapolis. Good year for Grant. Last year with the Redskins, 45 catches, 573 yards, 4 touchdowns. And it's just being reported the Colts are going to sign guard center Matt Slauson to a deal. Last 2 years with the Chargers, last year started the first 7 games, then went to IR due to an injury, and before that 3 years with the Chicago Bears. So Ebron, Grant, and Slauson joining the Colts, and you can hear every Colts football game this fall on 96.1 WSBT. My 5 question of the day is next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, 7 minutes in front of the top of the hour. The five parts of the Irish offense that will be the most different in 2018 compared to 2017. Little projection being done here. We'll start with number five.
Boy, I almost had a brain cramp when she said rain-snow mix. number five, I'll go with more passes to the running backs. That was an underused part of Notre Dame's game last year. And I think a big reason was Tony Jones Jr. just wasn't himself, okay. And he's really good at that. Healthy Tony Jones. And I think you'll see Jafar Armstrong used in that role as well.
Okay, number four.
More two running back sets. Again, Tony Jones's health was kind of what impeded doing more of that. But I thought when Notre Dame did that, that was a really difficult look to defend. Again, anything that could put a opposing defensive coordinator in a conundrum, that's what you want to do.
Five parts of the Irish offense. It could be a little different this year compared to last year. Number three.
I think when there's big runs to be made, you're going to run right instead of left this year. I think the left side of the line is going to be pretty good because Robert Hainsey's over there, but you're going to have your new guy there. But on the right side, you're going to have a more advanced Tommy Kramer, and I think he's going to be an excellent run blocker. And you're going to have Alex Barrs, who I think is going to get I don't know that he's going to play at an All-American level, but he's determined that that's his ceiling. And he's a guy that's always been a great technician, and he's adding physicality to his game. He said today he wants to punish people like Quentin Nelson did.
Ice. Yeah. Well, that's a high standard.
Yeah, it is.
Since there's a left and a right, is Sam Mustipher an independent then?
Sam Mustipher kind of goes with the right side. Yeah.
He leans right.
He leans right.
Okay, number two.
He leaned left. He's a...
He jumps on the bandwagon. There you go. Yeah. All right. That's a good way to get out of that. Number two.
More dynamic tight end game. I think last year there was the potential for that because Durham Smythe was really good. But Alize Mack just, he got off to a decent start. He had a good North Carolina game, and then he disappeared. And Notre Dame kind of waited for him to reappear instead of going to some of the younger tight ends. I think with Cole Kmet and Brock Wright, you're going to be more dynamic.
And more than anything else, what you expect to be different about the Irish offense?
This is more of a guess than it's a prediction. Better passing offense. They have to be better passing offense. Mm. And I do think it will happen. Even with less experienced line, even with some shuffling in some new faces and receiver, I think the quarterbacks will be better.
That's Eric Hansen's My Five Question of the Day. 4 minutes in front of the top of the hour, WSBT. A couple of minutes in front of the top of the hour, Irish head coach Jeff Jackson will join us in about 30 minutes to talk about the NCAA tournament and the matchup against Michigan Tech. And on Sunday, when the brackets came out, here's what Coach Jackson had to say about this opportunity for the Irish in the NCAA tournament.
Well, hey, it's when you get to the NCAA tournament, first of all, it's a great accomplishment for these guys, and most importantly, is we got to recognize that in this tournament, anything can happen. Last year, we were a number four seed and knocked off the top seed, so that's how close it is. It's like the Sweet 16 in basketball. If you just pick the top 16 teams in basketball, you know how tough of a tournament would start with, and that's what college hockey's all about. So it'll be a big challenge for us, but these guys have been resilient, and I think all year long we've respected our opponent, and that'll be the same case this weekend.
Well, they picked up two silver rings by winning the regular season and conference tournament championships in the Big Ten. Now they're going to go for that gold ring. All right, Eric, tell us what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports section.
Well, I got a mega notebook with all the news from today's Notre Dame football practice and where that's headed. Tyler has a feature on Alex Barrs, the new bad man on the Notre Dame offensive line. I will have a live chat tomorrow at noon at ndinsider.com and much, much more.
Eric, thank you. Sean joins me in a moment. Top of the hour, WSBT, South Bend. Budweiser's weekday sports beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. This is your home of the 2018 NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. More. March Madness coming your way Thursday and Friday. Sweet 16 action. Can the Purdue Boilermakers get to the Elite Eight? Can the Purdue Engineers produce a brace for Isaac Haas's elbow that will meet NCAA standards and maybe you get him on the floor? Not sure how he shoots, though, after trying to watch him shoot a free throw.
Didn't look good. I mean, if he doesn't have some kind of painkiller, whether it's injection or whatever, I think the brace is just what you said. It's going to be irrelevant because he's in so much pain, it looks like he can barely move the thing. Yeah. And I mean, he's got a broken bone there. Doesn't sound fun.
Pete Maravich at the free throw line. That's your best chance unless you go Bo Kimble. The righty from Loyola Marymount.
Switch to left, yeah.
For Hank Gathers.
Yep.
Shot the left-handed free throw.
That's
I'll never forget that. The first free throw he shot left-handed, the net didn't even move.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just pure.
But I think he worked on it all week, though, too, didn't he?
To just swish it. The net never moved. Incredible.
He did.
You know, the basketball gods have been pretty good so far, taking care of the less than stellar, clean programs and coaches.
In this tournament.
Auburn got bounced in the second round. Yeah. Beat bad. Bruce Pearl. That's just one example. But we're missing one. The basketball gods are missing one, and they're going to miss it very badly because they're going to get to the Final Four. The whiningest coach before the tournament. He got a bad seed. He got a bad first opponent. I can't believe we got to play Arizona in the second round. We're in this brutal bracket. Calipari and Kentucky are going to go to the Final Four. They have, according to the people that figure out all these analytics, outside of a number one seed, this will be the easiest road for a non-number one seed to get to the Final Four. Now, they were the 5, so they beat a 12 in their first game, Davidson. And then in their second game, they played, was it Buffalo? Yeah, they played Buffalo, who was an 11. Yeah, they played Buffalo, who was an 11.
Yeah, it was. You're
They're
going
to play a 9 later this week, Kansas State. And then they're going to face either a 7
or an 11.
That I'm wrong about the 11. Buffalo might have been a 13 then.
Yeah, Buffalo is the 13. I found the bracket here. Buffalo is the 13.
So 12, 13, 9, and 11, or a 7, will be their road to the Final Four. And the guy who complained and whined and threw a fit is going to have the yellow brick road handed to him to San Antonio. And of all programs, Kentucky's the last program that needs any gifts.
I know.
I'm not saying they give out gifts. I'm not saying that.
And that's one of the first things I thought when I see, because we see all these other Cinderellas, even Kansas State, I think you could include in that to an extent, even though they did have to beat UMBC. The path was paved for them a little bit, too. But still, how many 8s and 9s get by? Well, I guess Florida State's still in there, too. But just the fact that you've got the 11 and 7, Loyola, Chicago, and Nevada playing each other, but then you look and it's like, well, what's their reward? They get to play Kentucky. But is this Kentucky a little bit different, though? Are they really that good? They're probably getting a little bit better because they've got all these young guys, and we know that there's talent there because he always has talent. Are they really that good, though, or are we sort of lured into thinking they are because of the name on the chest?
If they were in the Kansas-Duke bracket, they would be an afterthought.
Yeah.
If they were in the Villanova-Purdue bracket, they would be an afterthought. They're on the right side of the draw. They're in the perfect spot. I mean, the perfect spot. You know who the MVP of this tournament is? I got to give it to the person in charge of packing the equipment for the Kansas State Wildcats. Why do I bring that up?
Because they actually packed the whites?
Yes. When you're an 8-9... and a 16 has never beaten a 1. And, of course, the better-seeded team wears the home whites or light color, and the road team wears the dark color. Why would you pack the whites if you're Kansas State? Because you're the nine, so you're wearing your purple or right. whatever in that first game against Creighton, and you know you're going to play Virginia in the second game, but they packed the whites. I give them credit. Or they, FedEx would have been very busy.
They could have just packed their throwback purples. Did you see them wear those a couple of weeks ago?
I didn't.
They were the throwbacks to the Rolando Blackman late 70s, early 80s era when they had a lighter purple for the top and then a dark purple for the bottom.
Now.
And I actually lived in Manhattan when they wore those. And just seeing some of those pictures, it's like, nah. It's not a good look. But they could have worn those and easily kind of had a catch-all because the purple top, it's almost probably even lighter than a lavender, I guess. Just a very light purple.
Is that more in style now or then?
The light purple? You don't see too much purple anymore. I was thinking about that, too. You really don't see a lot of purple.
Northwestern?
Mm-hmm.
I guess in the ACC, Clemson is orange and purple.
Yeah.
Probably every conference has one. The Big 12 has TCU.
That's true.
As well.
That's very true.
SEC?
I don't think there is anyone in the SEC.
I can't picture any... Purple.
Get some maroon, but no purple. Yep.
Pac-12?
Nope.
I don't think there's anything. So, yeah, it's very, very limited.
Yep.
That's not a good look, I don't think. The two different shades of purple, just not digging it.
It's not. I think if they went unicolor, if they went light purple top and bottom, it might have looked okay. But the light top, dark bottom, not a good look.
Okay. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Irish hockey coach Jeff Jackson will join us in about 17 minutes to preview Notre Dame going back to the NCAA tournament for a third consecutive year, the number two overall seed in this year's NCAA tournament. Just a fun fact, the last time the number two overall seed won the NCAA tournament in hockey, the Denver Pioneers in 2005. But for the last 7 years, the number two overall seed made the Frozen Four.
Hmm.
Just haven't won the title since 2005. So what you're saying is...
There's a chance.
The number two overall seed maybe is due. That's the way I'll look at it from a positive standpoint. Notre Dame football spring practice number three earlier today. Practice number four on Thursday. One of the guys highlighted in the media session with Brian Kelly after practice, Julian Love, the Irish junior cornerback. What a year he had last year. 68 tackles, 20 pass defenses, 3 interceptions, that dramatic return against Michigan State, the pick six. And in 2 years with the Irish, 113 tackles, 4 interceptions, 23 pass defenses, and it took Brian Van Gorder being let go to get him on the football field as a freshman. And boy, the rest is history right now. He is the number one corner on this Fighting Irish football team. And Brian Kelly was asked about Julian Love earlier today.
Yeah, we're expecting him to elevate his play. And so part of it is through what he's doing in the offseason and his conditioning and his weight training. And part of it is in our teaching. And we're going to be doing some things that I think are going to accentuate his ability to be a guy that can play press coverage. We want to play some press, and I think we, you know, it's something that we haven't done much here, but I think that that's something that he brings to our football team, and when you can press some guys and have the physicality like he has, I think it elevates his game.
Well, he's proven he can jump routes and take advantage of an errant pass. And on a football team with Quentin Nelson and Tavon Coney, it's hard to say many players had a better year than those guys, but Julian Love was at least in the conversation.
No, absolutely. And, I mean, I think he just got better as the year went on. You mentioned the touchdown, the pick six that he had against Michigan State, but he proved to be one of the more versatile guys playing both the corner and the field and the boundary corner, and then also going back and playing some safety and it against the option and Navy, and it kind of seemed like Sean Crawford, Nick Watkins, since they were kind of up there coming into the season, they kind of stood out earlier. But by the time it was all said and done, when you look at the 20 pass breakups and the 3 interceptions, he led the team and both set a record with the pass breakups. I mean, it was obvious who was at the top of the heap.
Probably 1 year ago today, we were at least kicking around with the safety position. Maybe Julian Love would have to move there to help out.
Yeah, that's
good
right.
Good thing he didn't have to go there because he has turned into this team's top cornerback. And Julian Love met the media today, and he was asked about preparing for a brand new season.
I think for me is my whole philosophy. I always try to set a goal or goals each year. And that's just, you know, little goals to try to get better, whether that's, you know, from a leadership aspect, a random, like, stat aspect, like, just, like, little things like that. And I think that is something I've always incorporated into, personally, like, my play. And then also distractions. You know, I guess the better and the older you get in any level of ball, distractions get more intensified. And so it's just eliminating that and just focusing on just leading the guys and just being proactive in terms of, you know, my...
I hope I'm not getting too excited, but I feel like with another step up in his game, and he's playing at a high level right now, I think it's fair to say that this is a player, if the team plays extremely well, could at least be in the conversation for All-American status this year. I mean, look at the 20 pass defenses last year and the three interceptions. I mean, that number, the 20 pass defenses, a Notre Dame record. So I hope I'm not putting too lofty expectations. And to win those type of awards, normally the defense has to be good and also the team has to be pretty good. So wins and losses will factor in. But from what we saw last year, if that's the tip of the iceberg, I feel like he's a guy that should be in consideration for All-American status if the play continues to head north.
Completely agree. And in fact, in my notes that I jotted down, I said that I think we can... very realistically think we can expect an All-American type season from him. When you come into the season with those kind of stats that he has, he's going to be up there. And then when you consider that you've got Alohi Gilman coming back, or not coming back, but coming in at safety, and the fact that the safety play should be better, that should just fortify things up front as well.
So I assume since we went down the 33 trucking road last year, the love boat will be the direction we're going this year.
I like it.
There's a lot of different directions to go when you have the last name Love, let's be honest. Uh-huh. But, you know, I guess Reeve has had his island, Love has his boat.
The language of love.
That's right. All right, here is Julian talking about some of his goals for this year.
So it was little things like just keeping nose on the football. So I hope that I showed that even if I'm backside, I'm running to the ball, trying to be in the play, be a better tackler, be a sure tackler. And then I wanted to catch more interceptions. I'm around the ball, I feel like, a lot, and I'm trying to turn, you know, a lot of BDs, ball disruptions or pass deflections, into picks. And so that's my goal.
You come on the love boat, but you never leave. He's got control of you. All right, one more soundbite from...
Drop an anchor.
You don't have to comment on my nonsense today. Here's Julian Love talking about doing a little experimenting this spring. Hey, coaches, do it. Why not players?
Sure.
So this spring, especially, I'm going to try to be very aggressive. And that's, you know, on 50-50 balls, not just trying to break up the play, but try to catch it and really make a difference. And I think if you do that in the spring and take chances... That just goes right into the camp and the season. And, you know, my goal last year was like, all right, turn, look for the ball more, try to get your hand on it, like, at all times. And now this year I'm trying to catch the ball and have my pick numbers or interception numbers go up rather than just a lot of just BDs when I feel like I can catch the ball.
I'm not always necessarily a big fan of shutdown corner. I just don't think there are too many of those.
Right.
Deion Sanders... That was a lockdown corner. So I'm
classed by himself. Yeah,
I'm very hesitant to throw that terminology around a lot. But, you know, when I think of those type of corners, I think of arrogance and high stepping and talking trash. Julian Love just seems like the most respectful, calm, collected, wouldn't say a word on the football field. Listening to those comments, he just seems like a guy, I'm just going to go out and play, let my stuff take care of everything. I'm not going to say a word.
It's true, because the next name after Sanders that I thought of was Richard Sherman. And both of those guys, I mean, you talk about polar opposite between those two guys, Sherman and Sanders, and Julian Love. Yeah, Aqib Talib. I mean, man, just a big difference. He does seem just very humble and just willing to work and go out and do his thing.
Well, the cornerback position's changed a lot over the last year and a half. Who would have thought Troy Pride Jr. would overtake Nick Watkins during the season last year? That's the case. We felt like Sean Crawford could be the best corner on this football team, but injuries have derailed him. Now he's kind of settled in as a nickel, but here comes Houston Griffith, the early enrollee, to push him in that particular spot. So it's interesting how the names have changed, but some of the names that have been pushed back into secondary roles are still on this team, and it's provided quite a very interesting depth at the cornerback position. It's as deep as any position on this football team.
Yeah, it's nothing but good for the team, because you're not just making these changes because like disastrous kind of changes, like this guy was so bad we've got to move this guy in there, that kind of thing. It's because guys continue to make progress, and you wonder kind of how much of it is tied to the new defense and just the whole thing and the progress they made over the course of the season working in it. And just expect to see, it's nothing but good for the team when you've got guys that are that close and locked in those kind of competitions for spots like that.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting competition for playing time. Heck, we don't even talk about Dante Vaughn anymore, and he was heavily talked about last spring. He has just been basically bypassed by a lot of guys that have played extremely well and have been given opportunities to get on the field. I mean, look at the left corner, Love, Watkins, Griffith, the right corner, Pride, Crawford, and Vaughn down there in the number three spot. And I don't think Dante Vaughn's necessarily regressing. It's just other people are surging ahead and now have taken advantage of the opportunities. And Troy Pride Jr. pushing hard now.
Mm-hmm.
Got in the starting lineup late last year. Now let's see what he does with the opportunity this year. All right, so spring practice number three in the books today. Practice number four on Thursday. Pro day for the Fighting Irish is also on Thursday. So my punishment for not being here is being a part of the Northeasters. So I think you're still getting the better part of the deal, Sean.
I forgot about that.
Covering spring practice and pro day, I think I would maybe trade spots with you. Although I'm looking forward to the hockey, I'm just not looking forward to the snow.
Yeah, and you get to fly right into it, too, it sounds like, huh?
Yep. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Didn't that happen last year? Didn't it? Wasn't the weather just horrendous when you went back east? I don't know if it was during the tournament, or where'd you guys go for the first round of the tournament last year?
Manchester.
New Hampshire?
Yeah, I don't think it was bad.
I thought you had bad weather for some reason.
Last couple of years, we had some interesting Boston trips.
Okay.
That's why Hockey's tournament this year was a beautiful thing, because they had, what is that, three Northeasters, and this would be number four?
Yeah.
We would have been right smack dab in the middle of all that. Thank you, Big Ten. Thank you. All right, we're going to talk some Fighting Irish hockey in about 5 minutes. We're going to be joined by Notre Dame hockey coach Jeff Jackson. He has led the Irish to a number one seed in the NCAA tournament up in Bridgeport. The game is Friday at 3 o'clock against Michigan Tech. We'll talk to Coach Jackson in just a couple of moments. You're listening to Budweiser's Weekday Sports, be brought to you by Budweiser on 96.1 WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Mischietta Sports Leader 96.1 WSBT. Along with Sean Stiers, I'm Darren Pritchett. The Fighting Irish hockey team getting sent to head to the East Coast. Bridgeport is the site of the NCAA Tournament East Regional. The Fighting Irish are the number one seed in that regional. Providence 2, Clarkson 3, and Notre Dame's regional semifinal opponent, Michigan Tech, number 4, the champions of the WCHA. They shut out Northern Michigan on the road 2-0 to claim the automatic berth into the NCAA tournament. And the Fighting Irish head into the Field of 16 as Big Ten regular season champions and Big Ten tournament champions. And the architect of the Irish hockey team, Jeff Jackson, joins us here on WSBT Radio. He led Lake Superior State to two national championships back in the early 90s, so he knows what it's like to go down this path. Coach, it's Darren. First off, congratulations on a terrific regular season. Your guys had one heck of a run so far this year.
Yeah, it's been a good group, and it's been a lot of fun. It certainly has flown by, so that's usually a sign that things are going on a positive note.
Without a doubt. Coach, I want to start with this. People that follow the Irish hockey team know last year they were the number four seed. They went up to Manchester, beat Minnesota, beat Lowell to get to the Frozen Four this year. Different situation as the number one seed. Do you coach this any differently psychologically, being the number one seed compared to being a number four seed last year?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing is, for me, the only thing that I needed to do was remind our guys that last year we were the number four seed and we knocked off the number one seed. And I think that, that college hockey is so close that there's not a whole lot of difference between 1 and 16. In many cases, probably 1 and 30. The teams are all close for different reasons. Like the team we're playing this weekend, Michigan Tech, they're an experienced team. They've got an older team. And that's, that balances things out. I mean, they've got some guys that have played there 2, 3, 4 years, and they played in the tournament last year under Mel Pearson, and Joe Sean's done a great job there this year, just trying to, even make them better. And they probably would have finished higher in the WCHA had they not had so many injuries in the early stages of the season. But they got hot here at the end, and they've gotten, really good goaltending over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and that certainly made them that much better. So we have to understand that a four seed and a one seed, there's the only difference is you get a nicer locker room.
That's true. Coach, along those lines, you have so many guys back from last year's team. So how does the feel of this year's team, how does it compare to last year's team, and how much difference do you hope maybe that experience makes going into this tournament?
Well, you hope that that our guys, the veteran players step forward and make sure that some of the younger guys understand the distractions that happen during the NCAA tournaments between the travel and people asking for tickets and family and everything else that goes along with being in that environment. And then, then it gets magnified with media coverage and, so many people are running around the rink, representing the NCAA. And like I said, media is always a factor. So, last year I thought it became a distraction for us, both in the Hockey East Finals and also in the Frozen Four. So, this year you hope that the guys have been through that, so they have a better understanding what they're up against as far as distractions. And, you hope that they grow from it. This group, this year has been pretty resilient. I mean, they've played in some really tough venues, big crowds, and they've handled it really well. I mean, the only exception might be the game up at the United Center, but that was the end of our streak, and it was like a big gasp of air being let out of a balloon. So I think the most important thing is that our guys understand that, this is a work business trip, and we have to be prepared to be focused for, the next 48 hours after we get there.
Irish hockey coach Jeff Jackson, our guest here on WSBT, talking about the Irish in the NCAA tournament. And coach, just from my novice hockey knowledge, you look at a lot of teams and you can always pinpoint who their number one defensive pairing is. They're going to get a lot of playing time against, for example, the Evans line or the Ogilvie line. When I watch Notre Dame play and the way Paul Pooley handles the defensemen, I have a feel who the top pair is, but coach, I almost feel like with the experience and the depth of your defense corps, you may have a number one, but I almost feel like it's almost 1B and 1C. Is this as good of a group of defensemen depth-wise and execution-wise that maybe you've had at the University of Notre Dame?
Well, it certainly rivals the group back with probably Ian Cole and Joe Lab and Teddy Ruth, mm-hmm. That group. Kyle Lawson was back in that group. It wasn't Flavin, but, we had a really good group back then as well, the first Frozen Four that we went to. But this group is probably a little bit more deep as far as what they bring to the table, as far as offensive defensemen, defensive defensemen, the versatility of the guys that we have back there. The fact that we have 7 of them that all play and contribute in different ways, I think maybe in that way it may be the deepest in their roles, more so than the depth of our defense. It may be the depth of our roles, where we have some really good offensive guys, some really good defensive guys, and we have some guys that are two-way guys. And it's a good balance of types of defensemen, which allows us to utilize it in different ways. We always try to pick spots to get our best offensive defenseman out with some of our offensive forwards. And, you know, defensive defensemen, sometimes if you're playing head-to-head against an opponent, you have to have them out there defending against one of your top lines, but, you know, we also have the guys that are more versatile that they can jump into the play and be effective offensively as well. So it's a nice thing to have. We better probably not get too used to it because next year we'll probably be a lot younger back there. So take advantage of it while we have it.
Jeff, Cale Morris has obviously been such a big part of what your team has done this year. What were your realistic expectations for him coming into the year after losing a goalie as good as Cal Peterson after last year?
Well, I'm sure that there was some question marks. I mean, Cale hadn't played in a year. I was more concerned about that than, you know, we recruited him. We knew he was he's a full scholarship goaltender. You expect him to be a guy that can step in and play. And when we brought him in, I mean, he was brought in with the idea that, that he's going to be a starting goaltender at some point. And I thought that, you know, we brought in Dylan St. Cyr because you have to have a little depth back there. And frankly, I thought that Cale and Dylan would battle it out probably a little longer than they did. But Cale stepped forward, and the credit goes to him specifically for how much he improved over the last year and having not played and, having such a great attitude during that time frame that, he once he got past that first month, I mean, he became a difference maker like Peterson was. So it was awful hard to take him out during that stretch that we were winning. And then it got to the point where every game had so much meaning at the end of the year that we kept playing him, and he's a good athlete like Cal was, and, he could certainly handle the minutes. So it was not a hard decision to just keep him in there. And, he earned the opportunity. He sat behind Cal all last year, so he earned the opportunity to have that same, chance to play regular.
Coach Jackson, looking back at the win over Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament title game, the opening 20 minutes was a terrific 20 minutes for your hockey team, building a 2-0 lead. Ohio State eventually tied the game with a goal early in the third period. And I know you've talked a lot about, and you hear hockey analysts talk about this, a two-goal lead is one of the more dangerous leads you can have in hockey, and Ohio State battled back from down 2-0. Is the second period and the early in the third period Saturday, can that be a learning experience for your team? And I don't know if you agree with this, but it almost felt like they got too conservative for a while protecting that lead. Am I right with that assessment, and how can they learn from that? Hopefully they'll have some two-goal leads over the next few games in the NCAA tournament.
Well, I've hoped for years that kids knew how to play with a two-goal lead. Even in the National Hockey League, you watch two-goal leads disappear quite regularly. So, it's almost human nature that you hate. You remind them, you hate to nag them about it. But I mean, you come out with such great intensity. That was probably our best first period of the season. And we come out, we think, hey, maybe this isn't going to be quite as hard, and the opposing team is all that much more motivated to come out and get the next goal. And then all of a sudden, momentum becomes an issue, and it's hard to, when that happens, it's hard to get the momentum back. I mean, you're already in a little bit of a hole emotionally, and then you go out there and they score, and then all of a sudden you feel pressure. So all of a sudden, your mindset gets more defensive and maybe a little bit more risky at times. So, trying to get that next goal again. But hopefully we learn from it. We've had that happen a few times. It happened mm-hmm. at Penn State. It's just something that you have to make sure that you don't lose that intensity that you start the game with. And it's a hard thing to replicate having 24 hours, basically, to get yourself ready to play a game. And then you go in the locker room, and that all that mindset has changed because you got the two-goal lead. Hmm. And it's hard to get that back. As coaches, you can jump and yell and you can do just about anything, and sometimes it doesn't matter. I mean, how many times did we watch the Irish basketball team this year be down by double digits and make a great run in the second half? It's the same thing, mm-hmm. I mean, we look at it differently being Notre Dame fans, but I'm sure that the coaches from some of the teams that played Notre Dame, especially the one big game at the end of the year when they made that big run at the second half, you know, it's human nature, and especially with younger people, it's not hard for them to get comfortable. And as coaches, you can warn them, you can tell them, and, you know, like I said, you can do just about anything. And in a lot of cases, it has no value. I mean, it's just you have to go through it and hope that you can get the momentum back.
How important was it to win that Big Ten tournament after you win the regular season? How important was it to kind of finish off with that and win the tournament as well?
I think it was really important for us to play well in the playoffs, because we had struggled a little bit down the stretch. And I think for us to have the game against Penn State and the game against Ohio State, obviously, they're both overtime games that could go either way. But the fact that they went in our favor gives us a little bit more swagger, a little bit more confidence going into the NCAA tournament as compared to maybe how we finished the season. So the bye week might have helped us more mentally than anything. And, you know, we got off to a good start against Penn State, and we got off to a good start against Ohio State, and we found a way to win both games. And that's kind of been the MO of this team all season long, is we find ways to win games that maybe some nights we don't deserve to. Other nights we win games maybe we deserve to, but, you know, we have to score a goal in overtime to win it. So, you know, it's been like this, you know, for the majority of the season. So those two games were not unusual for our team.
Coach Jackson, my final question for you. I was thinking about this earlier this week. In a calendar year in South Bend, hockey fans here will have witnessed a Big Ten regular season championship win on home ice, a Big Ten tournament championship win on home ice, this team going back to the NCAA tournament as a number one seed. Also coming up in a few months, the Winter Classic is going to be at Notre Dame Stadium, the Bruins and the Blackhawks, and you've referenced there's a very good chance there's going to be a Notre Dame outdoor game at Notre Dame Stadium. I just bring this up because diehard hockey fans 25 years ago, I don't think they could have imagined something like this happening. And obviously with you joining this program, taking it to new heights, you deserve all the credit for all this happening. Just your reflections on hockey fans, how it's really grown in this area because of Notre Dame hockey becoming an elite program and the Blackhawks getting good at the same time has obviously helped as well. But I almost feel like this is kind of the icing on the cake. This has been building for years, and the next 8 to 10 months is going to be really exciting for hockey fans in our area.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a fun ride for me as far as watching everything happen as it's happened. I mean, you know, when we first started over at the Joyce Center, clawing our way our second year, you know, having over a 31 year and getting to the NCAA tournament for the second time in program history, getting to the Frozen Four a year later, you know, I think that the building of the Compton Family Ice Arena was a huge part of our growth as a program. You know, we had some good success in the CCHA with regular season and playoff championships. And, you know, when we built the building, it was, you know, it was about every aspect of our program. It was about the recruiting. It was about the respect level of our program. It was about our fans. And certainly it was about our players, you know, and their physical development with the facilities that we have. So, you know, everything's been put in place put in place for us to have. And frankly, you know, for me, I think that the biggest thing that has allowed us to take, you know, we've taken two or three steps since I've been here as a program. And the arena was one of the more recent ones. I think moving to the Big Ten will end up being one as well, just because we will end up having more exposure. We're going to have bigger crowds because people recognize the programs. We're going to certainly have a lot more television time and things like outdoor games and, you know, getting exposure in different ways, being in the icebreaker again next year. You know, all those things, build brand recognition to recruits and to our fans. And, you know, we've had a really loyal fan base, and I think it's grown. The students are starting to get into hockey, and the band is obviously a big factor. But, you know, the building's incredible, and, you know, the thing I'm most proud of is the fact that we have such a tremendous staff. You know, and I think that that's one of the reasons our players buy into what we're doing, because we have such a great staff. Everybody's on the same page, and everybody's fully invested in what they do. you know, from our administrative assistant Sue Hallis to our strength coach Tony Walensky. You know, I think of, you know, all the people that worked, Kevin Ricks, our trainer, even our team doctors. They're all invested in this program, you know, and they do everything in their power to make sure that the players, you know, are given the best opportunity to be successful. And the university supports us to where that's a possibility, you know, trying to avoid entitlement setting into the program because they do get treated so well. But they're generally good kids, and they do some really significant things in the community and, you know, in service opportunities. So, you know, Andy Slagert does a great job, and Paul Pooley, you know, in building our program every day, you know, from recruiting to on the ice, the relationship with the players. And we have a great hockey ops guy in Nick Sergey. So, you know, everybody's invested. Everybody's trying to do what's in the best interest of our players. And, you know, and that's allowed us to have these kind of opportunities and this kind of success. So, I'm kind of, you know, I'm kind of the tour guide of the whole process, and everybody else is just driving the bus.
Well, you set the tone for this whole program. I would yell at you and give you more credit, but you got to get ready for this game against Michigan Tech on Friday. And as the number one seed, we do get the better locker rooms, and my only job other than broadcasting the game will make sure in the coach's office at the arena they get rid of the champagne and bring plenty of Diet Cokes. Once I take care of that, I think we're good to go.
We'll be fine.
All right. Hey, Coach, thanks for doing this, and looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. And hopefully it's going to be a very fun weekend up in Bridgeport.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Thanks, Darren.
Thanks, Coach. Greatly appreciate it. Irish head coach Jeff Jackson leading the Fighting Irish back to the NCAA tournament. They will attempt to go to the Frozen Four for the fourth time in 11 years.
Amazing.
Pretty remarkable. Irish and Michigan Tech, first things first, got to beat this Michigan Tech club who went on the road in the WCJ playoffs. They had to go to Bemidji State and win a series. They had to go to Minnesota State, a top 10 team, and won a series. They won game three in overtime. And then they went to Northern Michigan and won the championship game on the road to get there. So this is a battle-tested team. So what's easier, playing in these road venues or playing on neutral ice? To me, it's neutral ice.
Seems that way.
So this will be easy for them compared to what they've dealt with the last couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
All right, so the Irish and Michigan Tech, you can hear the game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. I'll get the pregame coverage started right around 2:45, the opening faceoff from Bridgeport at 3 o'clock. Should be a blast. All right, 11 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat continues next on WSBT. Thank you, Abby. 7 minutes in front of the top of the hour. It's time for a really brief installment of Rapid Fire.
And we do have just a couple quick ones here. Fill in the blank on this first one, Darren. Former Notre Dame defensive coordinator Bob Diaco coming back to speak at this week's coaches clinic is blank.
And the question is, can you keep winning? I don't know.
I know the answer, Connecticut. You know, he's only got 45 minutes to speak. That's one subject for him. He was the king of answering all our media questions. And he would go on and on and on. And I don't know if we ever got the answer sometimes, but that'll be very interesting what he talks about.
You know, that's exactly right. He's bound to say at least one thing that makes everyone scratch their head and just kind of go, what does that have to do with what he was talking about? Whether it's chili powder and sweet cakes and
Freddy Krueger reference?
Yeah, and werewolves and civil conflict trophies, whatever it happens to be.
Man, oh man. Frustrating.
I forgot about the civil.
It's going to be interesting.
Yes,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about, though, the rapid regression that he's made. He was last defensive coordinator at Notre Dame in 2013. Since then, he's been the head coach at UConn, the defensive coordinator at Nebraska, and now he's an analyst at Oklahoma. That's all that in four seasons.
Wasn't he the assistant coach of the year they went to the title game?
Yeah.
Even though they had
Brian Harden's
the SID on ESPN, shooting him with Bob Diaco's name.
Never forget that one.
Bob won that award.
Yep.
Wow.
The Broyles Award. Okay, Colts and Jets swapped some draft picks over the weekend. The Colts, the Colts get from the Jets the. Let me start this over again.
Sure.
The Colts give the Jets the number 3 overall pick. this year in exchange for the number 6 pick and also 2 second round picks this year as well as a second rounder next year. So scale of 1 to 10, how good a deal is this for the Colts?
I think it's a 10 because they need more players to have a chance to be a playoff contender. And I truly believe if they are going to take Bradley Chubb, the defensive end from NC State, at number 3, he'll be there at number 6. So you get your guy and you add picks.
Yeah, and that's... See, and that's, I kind of looked at it as well. Maybe they're not necessarily stuck on one guy, whether it's Chubb or anyone else, but you are only moving down 3 spots. And now, because you get 2 second rounders from the Jets, you're going to get 3 second round picks. So, I mean, that's a chance to really add a lot of quality to your team with 4 overall picks in the first 2 rounds. I mean, that's a lot. And so I'm right there with you. I gave it a 9.5. And as far as the Jets, it's a 1.5, I think, at best, because they're in the same situation as the Colts. They need not just one big pick. They need a lot of talent to add to that roster if they're going to get good.
That's the shortest rapid fire in history on WSVT. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. For Sean, I'm Darren. It's the top of the hour at WSBT South Bend.